This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, I'd like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 1 Overall Process Support Outreach Issue Call on the 6th of February, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. If you only happen to be on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no names, I would like to remind everyone to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting back over to Krista Taylor.
Thank you. Good afternoon or good evening to everyone. This is Krista Taylor for the record, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. As you can see, we have six items on the agenda to cover. The first topic is whether anyone has any updates to their SOI, and if so, could they please let us know now? Seeing no hands and no typing, I'll move ahead, but if you do, please let us know. Our first topic is the Registry Service Provider Program, which has kind of been renamed from the Accreditation Program from our discussions. It's in Section 4.2.8, which is also on page 19 of the online document. I'll share a link to that so that everyone has it. We would encourage everyone at all times to feel free to add comments or any suggestions that they have, as it is a working document. Our second topic is support for applicants from developing countries, which is section 4.2.14, which is page 10 of the online doc. And then we'll conclude with any other business and the next meeting date. All right, at this time, are there any other items that we'd like to add to the agenda? And if anything should arise during the call, we can also add it in at the end. I see Jeff has made a comment and made a bunch of changes to the intro starting on page 19, so please make sure you're all okay with the changes. Jeff, I did accept all your changes this morning, and they were all good from my perspective, so perhaps everyone else can also review and concur on that. For now, I'll just we'll jump right into topic number one, which is the Registry Service Provider Program. So right now, we're on page 19, and I think I have, I'm not sure if everyone has control of their documents, but if not, I've scrolled down to it on the shared doc. So I'm not going to read this all verbatim. I'm just going to do kind of a bit of a warm-up in the background to kind of get us started into the discussions. Just some brief notes from the explanation of the subject. So Principle C says, in addition, the introduction of the new top-level domain application process has the potential to promote competition in the provision of registry services, to add to consumer choice, market differentiation, and geographic and service provider diversity. And in the 2012 new GTLD round, a substantial number of applicants either employed the use of an existing back-end provider or entered into arrangements with newly created back-end registry service providers to provide both the responses to the technical requirements questions defined in the AGB, and subsequently perform the technical operations of the registry. And then going back, or going to the very end of that section, there were approximately over 30 RSPs that provided back-end registry services for multiple TLDs. The top five RSPs accounted for 70% of the 2012 new GTLD applications. Moving down to the next section, which is questions and concerns related to the subject. There's a note, the new GTLD program evaluation process was designed to review each new GTLD application on a standalone basis. And further down, the same services for the same RSPs were evaluated for each and every TLD application, and in some cases resulting in different technical scores despite providing the exact same services. And then just another review going into the efficiency, first paragraph, last line. Because applicants were treated individually, these responses were in turn presumably evaluated individually for each application by ICANN's evaluators, leading to additional inefficiencies and possibly even increasing the likelihood for mistakes or inconsistencies. The PDP working group considered whether pre-approval of RSPs would be desirable from an efficiency standpoint. For instance, click a box to say they were using a pre-approved RSP. This type of, you know, pre-approval process would be voluntary, meaning that an applicant could choose to use a pre-approved RSP when submitting its application. And in such a case, the RSP would need to be evaluated and approved prior to a contract being entered into between ICANN and the applicant for the TLD. So jumping into the security and stability section, just a few little principles that I'll review. Principle D, a set of technical criteria must be used for assessing a new GTLD registry applicant to minimize the risk of harming the operation stability, security, and global inoperability of the Internet. Principle E, provide assurance that an applicant has the capability to meet its obligation under the terms of the ICANN registry agreement. And recommendation 7, applicants must be able to demonstrate their technical capability to run a registry operation for the purpose that the applicant sets out. I'll turn it over to Sarah to do the next section here, and we'll continue the conversation. Sarah?
Great. Thank you, Krista. But I do know that Jeff has raised his hand, so I'm going to let him go first before I start. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right. I want to respond because Jonathan Robinson has asked the question of what are the edits I've made to this section. So, Jonathan, I pretty much rewrote a lot of section to just make it flow a little better and add more of the history. So in the part that Krista just reviewed, I added in the paragraph on, I added the footnote. I took out the term accreditation, added the footnote to the title of the section on page 19, which talks about why we're replacing the term accreditation with pre-approval. I added the background of subcontracting registry services, the history of that. So you'll notice, and then I put a bunch of examples in. So, for example, in 2003, Public Interest Registry subcontracted its technical operations to Afilius. In 2005, Travel subcontracted to Neustar. So I added all those examples in there. I added the statistics on the number of RSPs in this last round to point out that there were over 30 of them. And then on page 20, I just added some additional text that, again, with some examples of entities and the number of TLDs. I also added the notion that this was a voluntary concept and that it would not require someone to use a pre-approved RSP, but if they chose a non-pre-approved RSP, it would have to go through the evaluation prior to the TLD being, or prior to the contract being entered into between ICANN and the applicant for the TLD. So that's the parts I added pretty much for the past section that Krista went over.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. And please let me know if you can hear me. I got a note that you couldn't hear me, and I have a new computer, and so I just went in and adjusted my sound. So. Oh, perfect.
Your volume.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And apologies for the low volume before, working out all the bugs on my new computer. Anyway, so yes, we're looking at the rationale for the policy development, which is on page 21. So I'm just going to sort of do some highlights from the points that are here. So as the working group, we were to consider whether a pre-approval program would have benefits that support ICANN's mission and values. During our deliberations, we considered a number of questions, including, is a pre-approval program desirable? If it is, what's the criteria? How would it scale across unknown registries or an unknown number of registries? How would it be funded? Would the overall application process be changed? Could there be unintended consequences to simplifying the approval process? And what other areas may benefit from such a program, such as escrow providers or DNS providers? And moving down to page, why am I not scrolling? To page 22, you can see that it touches on our discussions. And so, again, I'm just going to highlight some of this. During our discussions, we consider the following question. What is the repetitive resource-intensive technical evaluation and pre-delegation testing and interpretation of the rules, a form of application rather than a fault of the rules themselves? And then during our deliberations, we also had some themes that arose, such as efficiencies must be improved, evaluation and pre-delegation must be consistent, predictable, to the extent possible objective, the program shouldn't increase ICANN's liability, applicants need to access or need to have access to a list of providers and their pre-approved functions or functional areas. Pre-approval must take into account the RSP's capacity, the TLDs that it's going to support, the services it's going to be providing. We didn't want to lock in applicants to current RSPs in that they should be able to perhaps provide the service themselves or propose a new RSP. And also the costs related to the evaluation and testing should be borne by the RSP and not the applicant. Yes, and I see a few notes here. From Jeff, sorry, I'm trying to read this. Jeff noted that FYI, I have not made any edits to the general agreement sections yet. I figured it would best kept to keep it the same. Yes, that is correct. And we do get into more details in the general agreement part. So with that, taking into consideration all of our discussions that we had, all the points that were raised, we put together this general agreement, which is sort of a combination of all of the points that seem to have general agreement to them. And so you can see that here, and it's rather lengthy, and I'm just going to read through it just so we have it for the record. So after all of our discussions and the considerable discussions that we had, the working group determined that an accreditation program per se would not be desirable. But believe that a new GTLD application process would benefit from a registry service provider or RSP program designed to limit redundant validation of RSP systems, specifically around pre-delegation testing. Ultimately, efficiency in the evaluation and pre-delegation must be improved. While all paths of the RSP system should require full testing, testing must be consistent, predictable, and to the extent possible, objective, and redundancy should be limited. The provider must be able to operate the registry in accordance with the technical requirements, for example, meeting EPP extension standards, file formats, billing, etc., and also guarantee resiliency and stability. Therefore, to ensure stability and resiliency, the criteria should be tested in excess of the RSP's routine activities. The criteria should also include multiples of capacity, showing that it can resist a DDoS attack and could address the latest threat malices. I hear someone's microphone is unmuted or something. I'm getting a lot of feedback. Does someone need to speak? Okay, I will keep going. Where was I? As these requirements might change over time, the provider would need to provide periodic evidence that they are up to date. And then there was a note that Francisco provided some previous comments to WorkTrack for regarding additional criteria for RSP to enhance the SSR. Any RSP program should be designed in such a manner as to not increase ICANN's liability, and costs associated with the evaluation and testing of an RSP should be borne by the RSP as opposed to the applicant, where the applicant and the RSP are not the same entity. Pre-approval of RSP should be done in a way that takes into account the capacity of said RSP, the type of TLD supported, services provided, and applicants must have access to a list of registry service providers and a list of functional areas that they have been pre-approved for through the RSP program. Applicants must not be required to select a pre-approved RSP, but be able to either propose providing their own registry service or select a new RSP. A new RSP must be evaluated prior to the ultimate selection of the applicant to manage one or more specific TLDs. Finally, getting towards the end here, it also noted that, one, there's general agreement that RSPs should not have a contract with ICANN, and two, there's general agreement of periodic reassessment of RSPs. Regarding timing, while most support the launching of such a program as soon as practical prior to the next application window, at the very least, a 3-month lead should be provided. And finally, a clear RSP application process timeline should be created, and it should always be met and adhered to. This will ensure predictability. So that is what we have pulled out from all of our conversations. I see that there is some input in the chat here. I see a note from Kurt regarding the footnote in relation to the term accreditation. Let's see. Let me scroll back up. He says, I don't like the footnote. In the original charter, the term accreditation was used as opposed to pre-approval. However, for the reasons discussed in the section below, I see Jeff has raised his hand, so I don't know if I should finish reading this, or just give me one sec, Jeff. The terms accreditation or certification were considered to be too political and had many implied, were considered to be too politically charged and too many implied a number of elements which were unintended. After considerable debate, the term RSP pre-approval or RSP program was deemed less subsidiary. We should not turn away from our accreditation program for political reasons or because it is subsidiary. We should state sound business technical reasons for going away from the accreditation and towards something else. Use of political and incendiary make our reasoning sound less than sound. And then Jeff has noted, does not envision a new agreement. So the difference is in the contract with ICANN. Jeff, you have your hand raised, so please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. And so the footnote is something that, this is Jeff Newman. The footnote is something I added. I have no pride of authorship. I just wanted to do some sort of explanation as to why we moved away from the term accreditation. And if you remember, we probably spent a good month or more arguing about terminology, and that many people felt accreditation was not the right term to use because it was it implied that there would be a contract between or a separate contract between the registry service provider and ICANN. It also implied to some that it meant more than, or gave ICANN additional liability than it has today when it approves someone. So the only thing that this is meant to do in changing the term is just to say that you are approving the back-end registry operator at some point prior to a front-end registry applying for a TLD. So that's why it's called pre-approval. And it's not meant to apply any kind of certification or anything else that comes with the other, and I use the word politically charged terms. Again, we could change that. The point was, any time that we mentioned accreditation, it seemed to get people to raise their hand and to focus on the word as opposed to the concept. So my plan was to add additional text in the general agreement section in the first paragraph where it says that we've moved away from accreditation. But again, happy for other people to propose some edits.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. So based off that, I'm looking at the record again. Do we have any other comments? Donna, I see you. Sorry, I was looking at the chat. I see you raised your hand as well. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. Donna Austin from Newstar. My understanding when we talked about a pre-approval process for RSPs is that it would largely be consistent with the technical component of the 2012 application and pre-delegation testing. And what I mean by that is that any RSP that was that wanted to be pre-approved prior to the next iteration of the program is that they could undertake a theoretical test, which would basically be similar to the technical questions that were provided in the 2012 application, and they would undergo undergo pre-delegation testing once. And largely in my mind, that's what I thought what we'd been discussing in the conversations we've had around this. And reading through what we've agreed here, I don't actually see that as being captured in these notes. Now, maybe it is, but if it is, it's not explicit to me. So I just want to make sure that is captured within the notes, if there's agreement that is what we've agreed on previously. And I'm also a little bit, some of the level of detail that's provided in the general agreement, so in particular the second paragraph, I don't know that we've actually had conversations around those specifics, and maybe, you know, they are consistent with what was in the 2012 questions and the PDT, and if they are, I think we need to connect those dots to make sure that we understand that they're not new per se, but they are consistent with what was in the 2012 process. Thanks, Sarah.
Okay, thank you, Donna, for the feedback. And regarding everything that's here, has been pulled either from conversation notes, from our calls, from the community feedback. So all of this is based off things that we have discussed. So apologies, not clear. And if you feel like anything is missing or you want to make notes on it, we do have the Google Docs so that anyone can go in and make comments. So please feel free if you think we're off track or have forgotten something, because it is a lot of information. Please feel free to add to it. You are not going to hurt our feelings by any stretch of the imagination. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman, and Donna's actually reminded me of something that we don't have in this section, which we need, which are the areas that we don't yet have agreement on. We got to make sure we capture those. One of those, for example, is that Donna bringing up the 2012 round. I think that that may end up being the case. But I think we have not finalized the technical requirements for this next round. And so I think the intent was to say that whatever testing we would apply to in this next round, and there may be, I'm not saying that there will be, but it's possible there may be different or added technical requirements. So I think what we're saying here is that whatever technical requirements will be imposed on registries going forward should be those requirements that are tested and evaluated as part of this pre-approval process. So you kept referring to 2012, and again, that may be the case if nothing is added. But if there are additional technical requirements or there are additional testing or whatever comes out of this entire process where there's additional elements, then I think the intent was to make it the same, just having it done earlier before the round where front-end operators come in and pick their TLDs or apply for certain TLDs. So that may be an area we don't necessarily agree upon yet. And the other area that we don't necessarily agree upon is, and we should add this to a section, is that there was discussion about, I'll use the term grandfathering, those in the 2012 round. Certainly there's been discussion on that topic, but I don't think we have agreement that that is the way forward. So we should describe that concept. I think, Donna, you presented that, and I think that we should describe that in here and then solicit comment on that very subject. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. And I see a question from Jonathan Robinson in the chat. Jeff, that's an interesting point. Will there be added or different technical requirements? If so, these may reflect real-world experiences from the current 2012 round. And Jeff has simply replied, I don't know. Jim, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yep, thanks a lot, Sarah. Jim Prendergast. So I'm going to throw out a scenario up there, and I'm curious to see how a pre-approval program would handle it. You know, in the narrative, we do, you know, there's mention of donuts submitting 300 identical applications. But what really determines what your application looked like, at least in the last round, was your Schedule A of registry services, and that's what pre-delegation testing was based upon. How does pre-approval work when you have one registry service provider supporting, say, 100 front-end clients who have 55 different Schedule A's because of either IDNs or verified TLDs adding new services, et cetera? So how does that work? Do those applicants then have to go through pre-delegation testing again, or are they automatically – I'm not quite sure how that would be handled. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. And I note that Jeff has noted that that is a great question to solicit public input on. I don't know if Jeff has anything else he wants to add to that.
This is Jeff. Not necessarily to add any like substance on that, but Jim, these are exactly the types of questions that if you have ideas on, we could try to include those in here. If you don't have ideas on yet or time to think about it, as most people would. It's a really good question. Those are the types of things we should include in an initial report, those questions, and then ask for feedback on that very type of thing about, you know, capacity and how capacity is tested, and then what if it turns out that there are additional ones. And you also bring up the point of, you know, what if it's 2 years later or 3 years later after it's pre-approved? Is there a re-approval process based on the then current conditions of that registry? I think that's an excellent question as well. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Jim. And hopefully staff has made a note of that question that you raised so that we have a record of it. Kurt, I see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Kurt. Just to talk about Jim's question for a second, which is a really good one, you know, maybe there, you know, and this requires fleshing out, but, you know, maybe there's an abbreviated pre-delegation test for a registry that offers a new type of registry service. So they're only testing one aspect of the registry operation and not the whole thing. And, you know, registries will build up a library of services they've been pre-approved for from time to time. So I think there'd be, you know, registries that have been pre-approved for a standard set of services, and that library in that will grow over time. And, you know, an abbreviated pre-delegation test would address the ones for which they're not yet approved. So that's that. And I just want to take up two more minutes. So I have three thoughts. The first one is that besides pre-approval, which is like an instant in time, you know, there should be some requirement of forward-looking and monitoring. And I'm not talking about monitoring of SLAs, because once you've breached an SLA, then that's really a failure. So, you know, I think that some sort of, you know, process control or statistical process control that shows when registry operations are going a little bit south, but before they breach an SLA, could be a commitment where registries self-police themselves, so no oversight from ICANN or anything like that, or a commitment, and I think it's in here, to have a rapid response to any identified threats, big threats from the outside. So my first thought is about that, to include some monitoring above and beyond just SLA monitoring, because that's not sufficient. My second thought is that there might be some assurances to registry operators that when they want to transition from one backend provider to another, that occurs smoothly, and that, you know, there's a winning RSP, right, and a losing RSP, and so you know, there should be some assurances that there's a process in place that the losing RSP cooperates fully with the transition. So this is sort of like instead of an IRTP, it's kind of an ISPTP. So I don't know if there needs to be a transfer policy of some sort included in that. And my third idea is kind of a wacky one, and that is that, you know, one of the services that RSPs could provide is be required to provide, you know, eBro services. So as part of being a pre-approved back-end provider, I will be an eBro in case your registry fails. And that way, if you go with a pre-approved provider, you don't need to, you know, that would be one way of getting rid of the COI requirement, because then there would be a protection in there. So those are my three thoughts. Thanks very much for listening.
Great. Thank you, Kurt. And those are some good points that you raised. And I see that Jeff has also made a note in the chat that the registry stakeholder group has a document that's been going around, but because it has not been approved by the stakeholder group, it has not been submitted yet. Some of the registries have made a point that if there are SLA breaches, that those may be used against the pre-approval process. Again, it's not a position of the registry, of the stakeholder, but an idea that was floated. And Jeff also noted that a pre-approved provider must agree to an eBro for a TLD that it supports. It's an interesting idea. And then also Jonathan has noted to Kurt, current experience does not show that an ongoing that ongoing monitoring is important. So thank you all for that feedback, and I see Ken has had his hand up for a very long time, so please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I hope you can hear me. I just have a couple comments on quote grandfather. If a registry service provider is shown over a period of years that they have substantial experience and that they've been in compliance with SLAs, I see no reason at all why they shouldn't be allowed the assumption that if they've operated effectively for years and been in compliance, that they shouldn't be given the presumption that they're capable of providing the services as long as the services are within the scope of the services they've provided before. It's not discriminatory at all. It's no different than a brain surgeon transferring from one hospital in New York another hospital in New York. They don't make him go through certification again just because it changes hospitals. I know that sounds like a crazy assumption, but it really boils down to it. The one thing I would be concerned about is in the evaluation process for the registry back-end providers, there has to be a very close look at situations where in the past that providers breached the SLAs. They may be in compliance now, but what you have is a record that shows that they have the capacity to go out of compliance as shown it in the past. And I think there has to be some sort of a presumption of some sort of a process that either considers that in the evaluation or requires additional steps in terms of qualifying for that capacity in a new round. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. And I will note that you were a little faint, so I'm going to see if I can paraphrase what you were talking about. I think you were saying that for providers that have been providers in the past, they shouldn't have, they should basically be grandfather clause in if they're providing or not changing, if the requirements or if everything is the same, basically, that there shouldn't be a new process for them to go through. But if it appears that they are going to be offering something new, then they should be tested for those specific items and not have to go through a full-on process. Did I get that right? Yes. Okay, perfect. Jeff, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. And I don't mean to sound like I'm disagreeing with you, because that could very well be the case. I just think that if there are new requirements for this next round, and I'm not saying that there will be, I don't know. I'm not going to prejudge some of that. But if there are new requirements, then I think automatic grandfathering may be a difficult thing because of the new requirements. It's, you used the example, which is a good one, of a brain surgeon that goes from one hospital in New York to another, shouldn't have to then be recertified. But if they go from one hospital in New York to a hospital in Virginia, they may actually need to be recertified. I look at it like if it is, the same requirements, then perhaps you're right and we should get comments on that. But if it's different requirements, like changing states in the U.S., then there may need to be some additional testing. So I want to make that point. The second point is on the, you've raised the issue that some registries have as well. Again, not a formal stakeholder group position by any means. It's just a document that's floating around now. But some have suggested that if you are an RSP and you've been subject to certain service level violations, that should not, if there is a grandfathering process, let's say, then that, but there's evidence of service level violations, then perhaps you do need to be retested and go through the whole process, based on your historical performance. So again, that's not a widely accepted position of the stakeholder group, just something that floated around. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. before, I know that we're about 15 minutes before the top of the hour, and we still have the applicant support program to discuss, and so I want to see if anyone has anything else that they want to say here on the RSP before we move on. Again, if you have some particular input you'd like to provide and you don't want to do it here, feel free to do it either on the list or go into the document and make some comments there as well. That would be great. So seeing no more hands raised, let's go ahead and move on to the applicant support program, which is on page 10. And let's see, Krista, do you want to kick this off? Let's see how quickly we can run through this and see if we can at least touch on the general agreement area, or do you want me to just go ahead and run with it?
I'll give you a break for a sec. So I'll jump in. Page 10, section 4.2.14, quick background. I'm just going to read over a couple aspects. ICANN put in in place a fee reduction scheme for applicants from economies classified by the UN as least developed. That fee was $47,000 in the first round. We're not sure what the implications would be on the next round if, say, the application fee changes. There was some pro bono services, and there was an additionally, there was a funding mechanism which seeded the first $2 million. Questions and concerns related to the subject. There were only, I guess, three people who applied for financial assistance. Only one met all the criteria. And some of the discussions were the measures to prevent gaming, did they discourage possible applications? There was a very short trajectory, lack of outreach efforts, lack of financial support beyond the application fee, and some other issues identified to hopefully address were improve the outreach. One of the aspects was around dedicated to applicants from developing countries and providing more comprehensive assistance. And then some of the recommendations under the rationale for policy development was to review the existing guidelines and consider possible additional recommendations to improve the support for applicants from developing nations. Work to support this effort may include identifying recommended support mechanisms, evaluation criteria, clear objectives, success criteria, and other elements. And so far, our discussions we felt that potential applicants felt that they didn't have the right to have complete or the right kind of information, and we needed a more diversified outreach to use traditional media plus online press, improved communications that are more frequent and easy to understand. And there was also a lot of discussions around focus on mobile, and that the business case needs to be made to both the internal management, the public, GTLD purchasers, and provide possible business models that may emulate along the case studies. We also, I think one of the overwhelming discussions on all of this that we've had to date was create more of an incubator for less advantaged applicants. And I think that's been a theme that's kind of come through this. Whether we should focus or choosing applicants in some of the five areas as defined by the GSA team to provide and build expertise for a longer period of time to help support the applicants. And another aspect is we kind of reviewed the list of the countries, and we kind of expanded beyond that because it should be open to applicants regardless of their location, as there are disadvantaged communities within wealthy countries, and they shouldn't be excluded just because of their location. Also, applicants who don't qualify should be given the opportunity to raise the additional funds and transfer to the standard application process. And just going to go into the general agreements for expediency here. So under the general agreement section, we have the applicant support should be open to applicants regardless of their location. I just mentioned that. Focus on the middle applicant, which are struggling regions that are further along in their development compared to underserved or underdeveloped regions. Again, to pay the additional application fee if they want to transfer to the standard application process. Improve the awareness by engaging with other ICANN communities and other suitable partners. And a more multifaceted approach based on the pre-application support, including longer lead times to create awareness, insightful experts to understand relevant regional issues and potential ramifications on the business plans, along with the tools and expertise on evaluating the business case and developing a market for ATLD. And again, mentorship, going back to that same aspect. So that's kind of where, kind of brings us up to date on what we've discussed so far. We did actually have some other aspects for, I guess, consideration or maybe to kick off the conversation, which is, I think we kind of killed, what metrics would be determined success, but something to discuss further. Evaluation criteria, if there are more than more applicants than funds, i.e. dispersed by region, the number of points earned in the evaluation process, perhaps the type of application or the communities they represent or some other aspects. And other elements, did we provide the right tools and how can we improve on that? So I'll maybe stop here and see if everyone or if there's any feedback or ideas that we can further add discussion to the topic and make some, I guess, further progress. I think I put everyone to sleep. I'll read the comments and Jeff says, no, it's a lot of material. Phil Buckingham says, incubator is a great idea. I hear someone thinking. Or sleeping. I think it is sleeping as well. So if there is too much information, perhaps we'll go back to the encouraging everyone to review the document and adding their comments for further discussion to make sure that we've kind of gone through all the ideas and can't think of anything further that we would like to add. Jeff notes we should put this out to list and see if we can get input from Rafik and others that were part of the working group, which is the joint applicant support. So based on that, maybe, and there's no feedback, perhaps we'll share the link again and encourage everyone's feedback on the mailing list. And I guess perhaps wrap up the call. Sarah, do you want to wrap it up for the meeting time for the next meeting?
Sure, yes. Our next call is going to be, I'm drawing a blank on the date. I believe it's at 20 UTC again, but
that's February 14th.
Candy, is it the 16th? February 14th. Okay, at 20 UTC, I believe. And if no one else has any other business, then we can call this a wrap. And thank you all for joining us and for your feedback. We do appreciate it. Oh, wait, 3 UTC. Okay, my bad. Oh, that's going to be great for the U.S. folks. They're going to love that. anyway, thank you all, and you can end the recording.